नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम। वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भगवद गीता एज इट इज चैप्टर 9 द मोस्ट कॉन्फिडेंशियल नॉलेज टेक्स्ट नंबर 30। अपि चेत् सुदुराचारो भजते माम अनन्यभाक् साधुरेव समन्तव्यः सम्यक् विभोषितो हि सः। अपि ट्रांसलेशन एंड प्रपोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस श्रील भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद। ट्रांसलेशन। इवन इफ वन कमिट्स द मोस्ट एबोमिनेबल एक्शन, इफ ही इज एंगेज्ड इन डिवोशनल सर्विस, ही इज टू बी कंसिडर्ड सेंटली because he is properly situated in his determination. Purport. The word sudaracharya used in this verse is very significant and we should understand it properly. When a living entity is conditioned, he has two kinds of activities. One is conditional and the other is constitutional. As for protecting the body or abiding by the rules of the society and state, certainly there are different activities. Even for the devotees, in connection with the conditioned life, and such activities are called conditional. Besides this, the living entities who is fully conscious of his spiritual nature and is engaged in Krishna consciousness or the devotional service of the Lord has activities which are called transcendental. Such activities are performed in his constitutional position and they are technically called devotional service. Now, in the conditioned state, sometimes devotional service and the conditional service in relation to the body will parallel one another. But then again, sometimes these activities become opposed to one another. As far as possible, a devotee is very cautious so that he does not do anything that could disrupt his wholesome condition. He knows that perfection in his activities depends on his progressive realization of Krishna consciousness. Sometimes, however, it may be seen that a person in Krishna consciousness commits some act which may be taken as most abominable, socially or politically. But such a temporary fall down does not disqualify him. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that if a person falls down but is wholeheartedly engaged in the transcendental service of the Supreme Lord, the Lord, being situated within his heart, purifies him and excuses him from that abomination. The material contamination is so strong that even if a yogi fully engaged in the service of the Lord sometimes becomes ensnared. But Krishna consciousness is so strong that such an occasional fall down is at once rectified. Therefore, the process of devotional service is always a success. No one should deride a devotee for some accidental fall down from the ideal path. For, as explained in the next verse, such occasional fall downs will be stopped in the due course, as soon as a devotee is completely situated in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, a person who is situated in Krishna consciousness and is engaged with determination in the process of chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, should be considered to be in the transcendental position, even if by chance or accident he is found to have fallen. The words Sadhur Eva, he is saintly, are very emphatic. They are a warning to the non-devotees that because of an accidental fall down, a devotee should not be derided. He should still be considered saintly even if he has accidentally fallen down. And the word mantabhyaha is still more emphatic. If one does not follow this rule and derides a devotee for his accidental fall down, then one is disobeying the order of the Supreme Lord. The only qualification of a devotee is to be unflinchingly and exclusively engaged in devotional service. In the Narasimha Purana, the following statement is given. The meaning is that even if one fully engaged in devotional service of the Lord is sometimes found engaged in abominable activities, these activities should be considered to be like the spots that resemble the mark of a rabbit on the moon. Such spots do not become an impediment to the diffusion of moonlight. Similarly, the accidental fall down of a devotee from the path of saintly character does not make him abominable. On the other hand, one should not misunderstand that a devotee in transcendental devotional service can act in all kinds of abominable ways. This verse only refers to an accident due to the strong power of mental connections. Devotional service is more or less a declaration of war against the illusory energy. As long as one is not strong enough to fight the illusory energy, there may be accidental fall downs. But when one is strong enough, he is no longer subjected to such fall downs, as previously explained. No one should take advantage of this verse and commit nonsense and think that he is still a devotee. If he does not improve in his character by devotional service, then it is to be understood that he is not a high devotee. Hare Krishna. So welcome to this evening Bhagavad Gita class. Today is a very, very, very important and significant verse that we are discussing from the 9th chapter called The Most Confidential Knowledge. So in this verse it is explained that even if one commits the most abominable action, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated in his determination. So in the previous verse, Lord Krishna, while explaining this devotional service or bhakti to Arjuna, he explained that I am equal to all. Ye yatha mam prapadyante tam tathema bhajamayam. He said, samaham sarva bhutesu namedvasi stina priha. That I am equal to all. Samaham sarva bhutesu. I am equal to all living entities. Namedvasya stina priha. I do not envy anyone. Neither I favor anyone. Nobody is dear to me, nor I envy anyone. So Krishna is saying, this world, there is nothing which I will be envious of. If somebody says I am a big wealthy person, then Krishna is the wealthiest of all persons. So therefore he has nothing to envy about him. Somebody says I am beautiful, then Krishna's beauty is unparalleled. So why should Krishna envy anyone? And he doesn't say anybody is dear to me in the sense that everybody has rebelled against Krishna to come to this world. There is no question of favoring one party or other. But then he says, Ye bhajati tu mam bhaktya mai te tesu chapyaham. But in this world, those who are devotees, Krishna says, I am inclined to help them or favor them specially. If somebody is not a devotee, then Krishna says, I am equal, neither I am friend nor I am enemy. Neither I am friend nor I am enemy. But if he takes up to devotional service of Lord Sri Krishna, then he says, I am a friend to them and he is a friend to me. Maite tesu chapyaham. That I become a friend to him because he is approaching me as a friend. Krishna says, Ye athama prapadyante. As one approaches me, I reward them accordingly. That's Krishna's promise. So, to emphasize this point that how his devotees are special, Sri Prabhupada explains in the purport that it is not unnatural for Krishna to favor devotees. If first of all. He gives the example, a very nice example he gives. Srila Prabhupada gives that just like a businessman, a wealthy man sometimes gives a lot of charity to people. Whoever comes, he gives. Okay, I have some problem, I want to start a business. Okay, take money. I want to start a gosala. Okay, take land, take cows. I want to marry my daughter. Okay, take money for dowry and whatever. So wealthy man, sometimes a charitable person, good-hearted person, whoever comes to him, he gives them. But when it comes to his own children, who are very faithful to him, who serves him very nicely, naturally, he will be inclined to help them more. There is nothing wrong about it, isn't it? There is nothing wrong. Own child who is faithful, who is respectful, who is always serving him nicely, why should he not favor them? He takes special interest in such children. Similarly, the Lord is father of everyone, but some people rebel and go away. And sometimes they come to take some charity the Lord gives him. But when one becomes devotee, accepts him as the only father, serves him with love and respect, then the Lord is inclined to help such a person and take special care. And to emphasize this point, he speaks this test number 30 today, today's verse. What is today's verse? He says, even if such a devotee, if he does some mistake, commits some sinful activities, still, he says, still he should be considered as saintly person. Sadhureva samante. This is Radha Gopinath ji ki. श्री गौर निताय की जय, श्री गोपाल जी की जय, निताय पर परमानंदे. सो हियर वी सी दैट द लॉर्ड इज इंक्लाइंड टू हिज डिवोटीज बिकॉज दे सर्व हिम विथ फेथ एंड एडोरेशन, रेस्पेक्ट एंड लव. देयरफॉर एज अ रेसिप्रोकेशन ही ऑल्सो वॉन्ट्स टू प्रोटेक्ट देम. सो मच सो that even if he commits some sinful activities, Krishna says we should consider him as sadhu. Now, sometimes it may appear a little extreme. How can somebody who is committing a wrong thing, still Krishna calls him as sadhu? Right? It will come in mind. So, it is like sometimes we see there are like only child of family. And the parents love them too much. Especially the mother loves such a son too much. Sometimes the son is mischievous, do some kind of wrong things. And the other people will come and complain against the child. But the mother would not mind. Mother say, oh, after all, it's my child, it's okay. He's a nice boy, like that. You have seen like that? We see in Krishna Lila also, Lord Sri Krishna does a lot of mischievous thing. He goes to all the gopis' house, plunders their butter. If he doesn't reach to the pot, he breaks the pots. If he cannot find any butter, then all the gopas together will pass stool and urine and come out of that place. They did all kind of mischievous thing. And all the complaints would come to Mother Yashoda. Mother Yashoda would hear all the complaints. But in the end, he said, after all, Krishna is our boy. After all the yogurt and all the butter that we are making is for his pleasure. So why to complain? After all, he is a nice boy. Like that, she would always excuse Krishna and embrace Krishna. And sometimes she would even chastise the gopis for complaining too much. So that is mother heart. Because it's own child. Similarly, when one takes to Krishna consciousness, devotional service, the Lord becomes very favorably inclined. And he says that even if such a person commits sinful activities, I say that he is a devotee. Sadhureva mantabhya. Mantabhya means my opinion. Krishna says, it is my opinion. Now, Prabhupada explains in the purport of this verse, that devotional service is more or less a declaration of war against the illusory energy. As soon as one takes to devotional service, he is declaring war against devotional service. Bhaktivedanta Swami writes a series of books called The Spiritual Warrior. So all the devotees of Krishna in the material world are called spiritual warriors. Warrior means you are on the war front. And when you are on the war front, sometimes you are attacked very, very severely. And there can be injuries also. But because you are fighting for the right cause, with a mission to please the Lord and Guru, spiritual master, the idea of fighting this Maya is to please the Supreme Lord Krishna, just like Arjuna was fighting on this battlefield to please Krishna, who is his spiritual master also. Similarly, each devotee is fighting against this Maya of illusion, of lust, anger, greed, pride, all these anarthas. So while fighting, there may be some accidents, there may be some assaults. Now imagine somebody is in the war, like Arjuna was in the war, and sometimes some arrow would pierce him, and there would be some injury, some blood would come out. Right? But often we see such blood as a beautiful mark on his body, isn't it? It beautifies Kshatriya's body even the more. Similarly, while fighting against Maya, there may be some injuries. So, Krishna says, do not consider that he is fallen. In my opinion, he is still a sadhu. Why? Because Krishna says, he is fighting and is falling down, that is a glory. Still he is fighting back. So, Prabhupada says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that if a person falls down but is wholeheartedly engaged in the transcendental service of the Supreme Lord, the Lord being situated within his heart purifies him and excuses him from that abomination. So this is the point. So he does not flee from the battlefield. He doesn't show his back. Or he does not shake his hand with the opposite party enemy while fighting. His idea is that, Bhagavatam says, that even if he falls down because of accident, because of the war, but he is wholeheartedly engaged in the transcendental service of the Supreme Lord. That means he does not stop fighting. He continues to fight with full force. And the Lord, as this super soul within the heart, he understands this idea. He understands. Because he understands the mood of the devotee, therefore, even if there is a sinful act which happened accidentally, the Lord immediately purifies the heart of such a devotee from that kind of situation. He purifies. The Lord being situated within his heart purifies him and excuses him from that abomination. Because the Lord excuses, therefore, being purified, again he continues his fight. And ultimately becomes winner. Prabhupada says, therefore, the process of devotional service is always a success. There is no failure. The impersonalists, they also try to understand that there is spirit soul, their body. They are not the body, they are spirit soul. And they are trying their best to recognize the spiritual identity and spiritual bliss. But because they do not take shelter of Krishna or the process of devotional service, when there is a fall down, there is difficulty. It is very difficult to come out of such a situation. I have seen in many impersonalists' life, many courts are there. And when they fall down, it is very difficult for them to come out of that. It takes a long, long time. But for devotees, the Lord, because the Lord understands the situation, immediately purifies their heart. The Lord helps. Because we approach the Lord with love and devotion and respect. Therefore, Krishna says, no one should deride a devotee for some accidental fall down. The Lord, like we see in many, many situations, like Gaurang Prabhu was explaining one day, that how many, many demons attacked Vrindavan. Many demons attacked. Not only they attacked, their whole idea was to kill Krishna. But none of these demons ever attacked Vrindavan or Brajavasis as such. Their whole goal was to destroy, annihilate Krishna. They're like focused. Putana came, she came, she just wanted to kill Krishna and just go away from that place. That was all. But Lord Krishna, whoever these demons came, he very sportingly played with them and killed them. It is explained that Kamsa was uncle of Krishna. So being his uncle, he was sending many toys to Krishna. And uncle sends gift. So all these demons, because they look very comical, no? You see this, children likes to read comics with all these figure of He-Man and whatever. Similarly, these are the real 3D He-Mans came to Vrindavan. And Krishna really loved to play with them as a child. And while playing with them, sometimes he would break these toys. That means he would kill them. He didn't like the gift of mama, uncle. So he would break them. So that was Krishna. Again comes out and another set of gifts. Again Krishna would kill them, break them. So all the demons who came to attack Krishna, Krishna would destroy them, kill them. But in the case of Indra, because of his pride, he was unable to appreciate Krishna's decision for offering all the sacrifices to Govardhan. He was not able to appreciate it. He was thinking all the offering, whatever was meant for him, he should get it for giving the reins. So because of his powerful position as Indra, that power normally intoxicates people quickly. And this intoxication lasts lifelong. Sometimes people may take liquor and ganja and all these things. That is also intoxications. And it keeps a person high for some time. Sometimes I have seen very skinny people. They drink some liquor and they get so intoxicated with that liquor that sometimes they would challenge very hefty people. Come on, I will beat you up. That is intoxication. But as soon as the things goes down, he cannot dare to meet such people. But the power and prestige of this world are so intoxicating that it lasts lifelong. Indra was intoxicated by that power of that king of heaven. So it was very difficult for him to appreciate how can a small child, because Krishna took away his quota, because of that intoxication of power, he could not recognize Krishna as the Supreme Lord. So he attacked not just Krishna, he attacked the entire Vrindavan, village of Vrindavan. He wanted to destroy not just Krishna, but he wanted to destroy the entire Vrindavan, all the Brajavasis, all the cows, all the trees. Krishna loved those trees. Krishna loved these Yamuna, all the lakes, whatever was there, that was favorite place of Krishna. He wanted to destroy everything. But in return, Krishna does not kill Indra. He just excuses him. Whereas all the demons, they just wanted to kill Krishna. They had nothing to do with Vrindavan or Brajavasis. But Krishna would kill them. So why? Because Krishna says, I am inclined to protect my devotees in all situations. Because Indra, although is a karma bhakta, karma mishra bhakta, his devotion is, it is colored with his desire for sense gratification, for position and power, but still he is a devotee. Therefore, Krishna is willing to excuse him. He excused him. So we see whatever Krishna says in Gita, it's not just some lip service. So sometimes we say, oh, Krishna says he's going to protect. If I become a devotee, Krishna is going to protect me. He says so, but will he do so? What is the guarantee? Then we see Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's activities are so pure, so nice, that although Indra committed such heinous, some serious offense, Krishna just forgave him, excused him. So then Prabhupada, of course, warns here. On the other hand, one should not misunderstand that a devotee in transcendental devotional service can act in all kinds of abominable, sinful ways just because Krishna says he is going to promise. Krishna is promising that he is going to protect. Just because Krishna says he is going to protect his devotees, Krishna considers his devotees to be saintly, even if they commit abominable activities. Therefore, I can continue doing abominable activities. Because I am a devotee, I can do anything whatever I want. And Krishna will excuse me. That is a wrong way to understand this statement of the Lord. Prabhupada says, on the other hand, one should not misunderstand that a devotee in transcendental devotional service can act in all kinds of abominable ways. This verse only refers to an accident due to the strong power of material connections. Just like in war, Prabhupada says it's a war. Bhakti, devotional life is like war on Maya, declaring war on Maya. So in the war field, there can be accidents. There can be assaults. And despite all the assaults, one continues to serve Lord, remembering him all the time. Krishna says, Mam Anusmara Yuddhacha. He says to Arjuna, you fight while remembering me. Govind Prabhu was telling a very nice point one day. Sometimes devotees may seem to break regulative principles. Sometimes. These are called controlled activities. But for a higher cause. They do it for a higher cause. Just like it is explained that sannyas should not be taken in the age of Kali. So there is a Shastric injunction. But still we see Srila Prabhupada took sannyas. His Guru Maharaj Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur started the process of taking sannyas, avoiding sannyas. So why is it so? Why did they broke the injunction of the scripture? Because for a higher purpose, for the sake of preaching. Because sannyasi is respected in the society. And they can take the advantage of that situation and give them transcendental knowledge. So one can break the principles for a higher cause. Just like sometimes you go to some big restaurant or some places, and on their kitchen door they would be writing, no admission or no trespassing without permission, because it will hamper their sanctity. Restaurant, there is no sanctity, but say for a devotee, temple kitchen, the sanctity is there, cleanliness is there, purification is there. One needs to take bath and wear clean clothes and all these things. Somebody else enters, he spoils the whole bhoga. Sometimes people look upon with a desire to eat the foodstuff which is not offered, that is contaminated. Restrictions are there. But suppose there is a fire in the kitchen. And somebody is there who is not aware of it. And he is dumb and deaf. So what will you do? Will you just stand and watch? No, you will just break the door and enter in just to save him. So here you are breaking the principles, breaking the rule for a higher cause. For a higher cause. That sort of thing is allowed. Similarly, on the war front, there are accidents a devotee may face sometimes. But his idea is not to break the, not to fall down, to remain fallen. Because it happens. Just like if the person is entering the kitchen without any higher cause, then that is called, he really falls down. That kind of thing is not encouraged in the Shastra. Similarly here also, Krishna says, while you are fighting against Maya to attain my lotus feet, something goes wrong, I excuse it completely. I do not even consider it to be fall down. I consider to be sadhu. Such a person is a sadhu. So, our Radhika Vallapur was giving a class. He was very nicely describing there are two different concepts which is related to this verse very nicely. He was explaining that there are two things. One is called sin, the other is called offense. Sin means you break a rule. It's like crime, you break a law. Offense means it is actually even more severe. All the devotees, as devotees, you should try to notice these points. He says, sin is like dhulir lepa. Dhuli means dust, lepa means a covering. So sinful activity is like a layer of dust on the heart of a person, this living entity, soul. This little pious activity you do, it just, you can remove it. But offense is like vajra lepa. You sometimes you carve on stone, lines on stone, it cannot be, you know, it is more lasting. But if the on the stone, if you write on vajra, vajra means Indra's sword, it can shatter the mountain peaks. With that, if you write something on stone, how strong it would be, just imagine. So offenses are more severe. Now, how to understand this? Just like offenses are actually committed by devotees, and sins are committed by non-devotees. Just like that. Just like in a family, suppose some thief breaks into their house and he is caught. The thief is caught for committing that crime. Then either the family will beat them up or handed them over to the police. Like sometimes I was coming in local train, one man was trying to pickpocket somebody, pick somebody's pocket. And this time he was caught. And as soon as he was caught, everybody started beating him. The person whom he was trying to steal, he should beat him, okay. But everybody in the train started beating him up. Because sometime or other they lost some their, you know, money. All that anger was there, just directed on this poor fellow. So either you beat him or handed him up to the police, then you forget that person, right? Forgive or forget or whatever. So, that is compared to sin, breaking a law or a rule or a crime, committing crime. But imagine, in the family, if the son steals the money. So this thief breaking into the house is compared to sin. Dhuli relep. So you forget the thief. One or two days you'll forget. You'll forget and forgive him also. Poor fellow. He's beaten up so badly. But if the son tries to steal father's money and father finds it out, then what will he do? He cannot beat him up. He cannot hand him over to police. But he is utterly displeased with that activities. That is offense. So when a devotee, although he knows if something happens wrong, Krishna considers him to be sadhu, he is such a nice person. But despite knowing all these things, if one commits a sinful activities, how much displeasing it would be to the Guru and Krishna. That is offense. The father simply tolerates and hopes that someday this son of mine will actually become a nice person. So therefore, offenses are considered to be worse than sin. And what is the way to come out of it? The way to come out of it is to realize that fallen situation. One has to admit that situation and beg from the spiritual master, from the Vaishnavas, from the Supreme Lord. One should beg forgiveness. And in their heart of heart, resolve and determined not to commit such things. and render devotional service. In that one can come out of it. The Lord is all merciful. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Sri Radha Kanta Namaste. The Lord is ocean of mercy. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu. Karuna Sindhu means ocean of mercy. He is so merciful. Anybody who genuinely admits the problems and asks for forgiveness, the Lord is willing to give forgiveness quickly. But then, if he continues his devotional service without such mistakes, then the Lord considers him to be a sadhu all the time, even if there is some accidental fault or may occur. So therefore, one should not take advantage of this verse and commit sinful activities. It is called the seventh offense against holy name. To commit sinful activities and the strength of the holy name, it's considered an offense against the holy name, that is Krishna. Krishna's holy name and Krishna is non-different. So offenses are worse than sins. Understanding this, one should very diligently avoid offense. If sin is committed, Krishna will forgive. That is accidental. So, we have some time. But when one is strong enough, he is no longer subjected to such fall downs, as previously explained. So when one continues like this, then being empowered by Krishna, one ultimately wins the war against Maya. So devotional life success is always guaranteed. For Arjuna, to win the battle was absolutely impossible in one sense, because Bhishma, Drona, the two formidable. Nobody could defeat them. They're so powerful. And besides, they had Karna, who is also very powerful. And they had so much army strength, so many soldiers. It was so difficult to defeat. It was absolutely impossible. But because Krishna was there with Arjuna, therefore his victory was guaranteed. And Krishna was telling Arjuna, you just become an instrument. Like in the 11th chapter, it will be explained how Krishna is showing his Viswarup to Arjuna, Viratrup. And there he shows all these big warriors are rushing into his mouth. Sometimes their heads are crushed in between his teeth, Viratrup teeth. They're all dying, all. Especially he saw Bhishma, Karna, Drona and Jayadrath. He got a boon that one day he could defeat the Pandavas. That blessing he had. Therefore Arjuna had little doubt whether Jayadrath would, create a problem. But he also saw him also dying. Then Krishna says, just become instrument and kill them. And he says, the words he uses is, they are already killed by me. You just become an instrument, Krishna says. What does it mean? It means, these people are already killed. You have to just go and shoot the arrow, that's all. Just like sometimes the police are behind some terrorists, for example. Like a heavy chase is going on. This guy is running and the police are running behind him, carrying guns and going in the street. Just imagine like that. And while chasing, suddenly a car comes and hits the terrorist. Okay, and he dies there. But still, these policemen are so much angry at him, they go and shoot him. They just said, did, 4 or 5 bullets, they just put on him. Even if he's already dead. So similarly, Krishna says, I've already killed them. You just go and shoot them. Extra. And take the whole credit. So, if we are fighting and Krishna is on our side as devotees against Maya, then victory is guaranteed. Victory is guaranteed. One can easily go back to Godhead. Therefore, bhakti is most powerful process. Now still, one may ask, well, these are all things is okay, all explanation is okay, but Still, how can somebody is doing abominable activities and Krishna calls him sadhu? That is like little too much, isn't it? How can you call somebody sadhu who is doing something very, very abominable, very, very sinful? Sudaracharya means, achara means activities. Achara means refers to good activities. Whenever there is no prefix, it is considered to be good. Achara means good activities. Durachara means bad activities. Durachara. And Sudurachara means very, very bad activities. So when if one does such abominable activities, Krishna, how can he call him saintly? So I'll just explain a little bit of the next verse. He says, because he quickly becomes righteous and attains lasting peace. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. So I'll just read a very nice commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and we'll end there. A very, very nice conversation is here actually. These two verses are well connected, therefore I'll just speak a little bit. Now the acharyas, they are so nice that they can explain the commentaries of Gita in a way as if they are able to read the mind of Krishna. See, when Krishna speaks a verse to Arjuna, it is not something like that we speak. Sometimes the big learned scholars or big scientists, when they present a paper or some concepts, they may write few words on the blackboard or on the PPT, PowerPoint presentations. They show some slides. There may be few words appear on the screen. But behind those words, a lot of thought has gone into it, isn't it? A lot of thinking process has gone into it. Similarly, when Krishna speaks, it's not just few words he's speaking. A whole lot of thought has gone behind it. And the acharyas, being very, very pure devotee, they enter into this mystery of all the verses and then speak what all Krishna has put behind these words. When he says, Apicheta Sudurachara. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he gives a very nice comments in the form of asking a question and answering it. So I'll read it, just kindly hear it attentively. Very, very nice. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on verses 30-31 as follows. Two verses combined. He says, one might ask, but if someone is corrupted by such bad behavior, how can he be called sadhu? So this is answered. So Krishna is answering this. He says, he should be considered as such and thought of as a sadhu. So he's saying, he should be considered as sadhu. He's doing some bad activities, but still he should be considered sadhu, Krishna is saying. That means, well, someone might say, one may be considered a sadhu partially to the extent that he is worshipping Krishna. This conversation is like between a person and Krishna. Actually what he is writing, somebody is talking to Krishna. So he's saying, if someone is corrupted by bad activities, how can he be called sadhu? Then Krishna says, he should be considered as such and thought of as sadhu. So, he should be considered is like an injunction. That means, Krishna is saying, it is I am saying he is sadhu. So, therefore, you just accept it. If you don't accept, then you are disrespecting my command. The Lord's command should be respected and obeyed. Therefore, he says, because I am saying it should be considered sadhu, you should consider it. Then he is asking, well, one may be considered a sadhu partially to the extent that he is worshipping you. Okay, because he is worshipping you, consider him as sadhu. Because you are using the word consider, we can consider him as sadhu because he is worshipping you. But to the extent that he is usurping others' men's wives and property, he is not to be considered a sadhu. He is worshipping you, okay, he is sadhu. But if he is misappropriating money and wealth and women, then how can we call him sadhu? Then Krishna is answering. This is answered by the Lord by the word eva only. Krishna says, he should only be considered a sadhu in always completely. He says, sadhur eva samantabhya. Apicheta sudurachara bhajatne mamanyanya bhag. Sadhur eva samantabhya. Just not mantabhya. Eva means he is completely sadhu. So now this person is a little bewildered. Because he say, how can you say sadhu? He says, no, no, he is sadhu. What does it mean? Then it is explained, Vishwanatha Chakra Thakur explains, that we should never view him as not a sadhu, because his determination is completely fixed. I may go to hell or obtain an animal birth because of my unavoidable sinful reactions, but I will never give up my exclusive worship of Krishna. Such determination is praiseworthy. Therefore, he is always a sadhu, Krishna says. Then again, one might ask, but why do you accept the worship of such an irreligious person? Okay, you, because he is worshipping you and you consider him sadhu completely, but how can you accept offering from a person who is abominable? Somebody is asking like that. How can you accept the worship of such an irreligious person? Why do you consume the food and drink offered by one whose heart is contaminated by lust, anger and other faults? So in the response, the Lord says, he quickly becomes religious. This second verse. He quickly becomes religious, righteous and attains lasting peace, Krishna says. So this expression is not that he is going to quickly become a sadhu. It's not like that, or righteous, religious. He says he quickly becomes religious, means present tense. Although he has done abominable activities, instantly he becomes religious. Therefore, I say he is sadhu. How is it so? Because a devotee who commits some wrong activity, he instantly thinks of Krishna after committing this sin. This means that immediately after the committing impiety, he remembers me and feels remorse. He thus quickly becomes religious. He thinks, alas, alas, there is no person more fallen than me. I defile the reputation of the community of devotees. Damn me. Again and again feeling remorse like this, he achieves complete peace and detachment. So because he thinks of Krishna and he feels bad about himself. Therefore, because of that that kind of remorse, that kind of feeling bad about himself, those thoughts acts like a fire and purifies his heart. Besides, because he thinks of Krishna, the very name of Krishna purifies a person. Therefore, instantly he becomes religious. And still one may ask, well, if he actually becomes religious, there can be no argument about such a person. Okay. Somebody becomes religious, becomes pure, we have no arguments against him. But what about a person, a devotee, whose behavior is wicked and who fails to give up his bad habit, bad behavior, throughout his whole life? What can be said about this? What can be said about him? Somebody asked like that. Then Krishna, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, writes very nicely. He says, always affectionate to his devotees, the Lord responds to this doubt with complete confidence and with some anger. Somebody asks like this, why are your devotees like this, like that? What about this? What is this nonsense? The Lord, with confidence and with some anger, he says, in the words beginning with Kaunteya, Kaunteya Pratijanhi, Name Bhakta Pranashyati. He says, my devotee never perishes. Even when he dies, he never falls down. It's like strongest statement Krishna gives. Kaunteya Pratijanhi, Name Bhakta Pranashyati. So even a devotee commits sinful activities again and again, still Krishna forgives. Because he is determined to come to lotus feet of Krishna, because of material conditioning, one may fall down again and again, one may feel defeat. Because he is determined to fight and reach lotus feet of Krishna, Krishna helps him and considers him to be sadhu. So here, Chakravarti Thakur Pad writes that to encourage Arjuna, who is disturbed with sorrow and apprehension over the thought that hard-hearted quibblers who indulge in false logic will not accept this. So this kind of logic, when Krishna says, my devotee will never fall, whatever may happen, because they are my devotees. So Arjuna is thinking that all these logicians, those whose hearts are hard, they have no, the hearts are not served because of not rendering service to Krishna. Such kind of people will not accept it. Very difficult. So when he was thinking like that, to encourage him out of such feelings, that how the hard-hearted people will accept such thing, how the logician will accept such a concept. There is no logic in it actually. If you see, there is no logic why Krishna should forgive people who commit sins because they are devotees. But Krishna's love is there, his affection is there. So to encourage Arjuna, because he is afflicted by such thoughts, the Lord says, O Kaunteya, this is explained by Sridhar Swami. He says, O Kaunteya, go to the assembly of those disputants. And that makes all the kind of dispute. Logicians are famous for making disputes. They just quarrel and argue. Disputants and making a loud sound with drums and cymbals. Just blow the mridanga, play the mridanga loudly and kartals, play the kartal and say, raise your arms fearlessly and declare my promise. I, Krishna, the Supreme Lord, and even if my devotee is wicked in his behavior, he will never perish. On the contrary, such a devotee is sure to become successful. This Krishna is saying. Just tell them. Kaunteya pratijani name bhakta pranashati. So their bad logic will be shattered by this confident declaration. Their bad logic will be shattered by this confident declaration. They will certainly take shelter of you as their guru, Krishna is saying. So such is the interpretation given by Sridhar Swami. Then someone may ask, but why does the personality of Godhead himself make this promise? Why not? Why not the Lord make this promise himself that I will protect my devotees? Why is saying Arjuna, you declare? Why does he instead deputize Arjuna to promise? In the same way, as the Lord will later say, without a doubt, you will come to me. I promise you this because you are my dear devotees. So later he says, Sarva dharma paritajya mamayakam saranam braja aham tvam sarva papeva mokshami masucha. Do not worry. Take my words, you will come to me. But why here he is asking Arjuna, you declare. Why doesn't he now say, Kaunteya, I promise that my devotee will never perish. Why doesn't he say like this? So here is the answer. The Sridhar Swami is saying, because at that moment the Lord was thinking like this. What was he thinking? I am very affectionate to my devotees. I am very affectionate to my devotees. And cannot tolerate their being discredited at all. I don't want my devotees to be discredited under any circumstance. So much love he has. And he says, I will often break even my own promise and let myself be discredited to protect my devotees' promise. Sometimes I may break my promise to give the credit to my devotees' promise. Like we have seen, that Krishna, like Lord Ramchandra, was always very, very prudent, very, very, very careful to keep his promise. Prana jaya parvachana jaya. But Krishna, from the beginning, he was stealing and kind of doing all kind of naughty things and was not keeping his promise so much. So many times he promised, I won't steal anymore. But he stole. And when he went to Mathura, he said all the Brajavasis that I will come back in few days, don't worry. Promise, I am coming back. Never came back. So now, again, he is going to fight the Mahabharata war. In the Mahabharata war, he will discard his own promise in order to protect Bhishma Dev's promise. Bhishma Dev's promise is what? I will make Krishna fight. But what is Krishna's promise? I will not fight. I will just counsel the Pandavas. But to keep Bhishma's promise, he gives up his own promise and takes up a weapon. Just a chariot wheel. But that was enough to break his promise. He breaks it. Therefore, he is thinking, thus atheistic and logical quibblers will only laugh if I now offer my own promise. all the logician would love, oh, this guy is saying like this, he never kept his promise, now he is saying like this, these are all nonsense. So therefore, but they will have to acknowledge Arjuna's promise as if it were written in stone. Therefore, I will have Arjuna make this promise. So therefore, when he says, Arjuna, you declare it, then people will take it seriously. And they will understand that actually I mean it. I mean it, that my devotees will never promise. One who takes up to the process of devotional service, fights till the end, despite all kind of injuries, fall downs. To such a person, Krishna is willing to help and does not even consider. Just like in war, there may be injuries, there may be blood, an akshatriya. But those blood is considered to be beautiful. That is explained in Ramayana, when Lord Ram was hit by one of the brother of Ravana called Khar was hitting, and he shot an arrow that hit Lord Ram's head, and some blood came out. And Valmiki explains that blood was like copper red color, copper oxide on Sumeru mountain. Sumeru mountain is very beautiful, it is made of gold, very beautiful, and that copper oxide makes it even further beautiful. Narasimha Puran says that just like in the moon, Prabhupada quotes this in the purport, just like moon, there are some black spots. And you see some kind of rabbit form in there. They are called Kalanka. Kalanka means like not good things. But those black spots, just like some sinful accidental fall down on behalf of devotee, they are like black spots. Those black spots cannot stop the beauty of moon. It cannot stop it. Black spots are there, Kalanka is there, but that cannot deny the beauty of the moon or the cooling shines, cooling rays that it shines on people. It cannot deny. Similarly, some devotees in their service, there may be accidents, there may be some problem, but it cannot stop that beauty, that their devotional service, which is shining like moon. It cannot stop it. But at the same time, one should be very, very careful not to commit any offense, because offense really displeases Krishna and all the devotee communities. So this verse should be taken like that. Sinful activities, accidental fall down, Krishna forgives. But on that strength of this verse, if one commits sins, thinking that he is devotee, then that is no more sin, that is an offense. And offense is very, very displeasing to the Lord and the devotees. The Lord simply turns very, very upset with that kind of activities. It's like Ajamil, he was doing all kind of sinful activities. But as soon as he took up the process of Krishna consciousness, he gave up all the sinful activities. Purified. But whereas it is explained, Daksha Prajapati, although he was doing all kind of religious activities, because he committed offenses, aparadh. Aparadh means aradhana. Aradhana means worship, also devotional service. Apa means wrong, negative. So aparadh means a wrong way of worshipping. That is not allowed. But on part of Krishna, he is willing to forgive like anything. Because Krishna is such a nice, merciful, supreme father. Just like if father is merciful in a family, then his son is not supposed to steal the money or say bad word about the father. The father simply tolerates if such a thing happens. He cannot beat the son, he cannot give him to the police. Because he is son after all. Similarly, when you commit sinful activities in the way of, in the knowingly, not accidental. That is what upsets. Krishna has to tolerate that. The devotee has to tolerate. Therefore, one should not go in that direction. Rather, one should fight like a warrior for the pleasure of Krishna, and if something goes wrong, Krishna is willing to say, Krishna is not willing to see those things at all. Krishna is sadhu reva samantava. He is always a devotee. That's how this verse has to be understood. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Are there any, I think it is time for darshan. But there is only one question we can take. 1 minute is remaining. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki, Intayagur Pemanande, Hari Hari Bol.